We've been looking at this transitional period from the reign of David, and we've been moving into now the reign of Solomon. We're going to continue our thoughts. We looked at chapter 1 of 1 Kings in our last class. We're going to move on into chapter 2 this evening in just a minute. As we think about what we studied last week, we talked about Adonijah and his attempt at rebellion, or I don't even know if you consider it rebellion, but his attempt at making himself king, and that didn't work out, of course, very well for him. We discussed how that promise had been made from David, and really ultimately God, that Solomon would be the next king. And so that kind of spurs on the establishment of Solomon's kingship. And then as we were discussing at the end of our class, was David was preparing Solomon for this tremendous responsibility that now has been laid on his shoulders. And as he is preparing to become king, David has some advice. And then he has some requests, and that's what we're going to start at next week. This week. I hope you had a chance to read through the text and think about it. But as we do, a few things that we're going to look at in this study is David. We're going to continue that thought of David preparing Solomon to be king. And then we'll get get to the bookmark, right? The passing of David from this life. It really ends a good period for Israel with some things in it that were negative. But David was a good king. And so we'll have some thoughts to share about that. And then, of course, then Solomon's reign really begins. His reign is established through some actions that he's going to do as he sets him, you know, as he takes the reins of being king. We will read about one of the first requests of Solomon, and that's actually something spurred on by God himself. And he's going to come and ask Solomon for for a blessing from him. And Solomon's going to ask for wisdom, and we'll see that. And right away, we'll see how that prayer is answered and how this new gift is going to be tested. And so that's where we hope to get this evening. So let's go to chapter 2, and we're going to continue our thoughts. I'm going to quickly review a little bit of what we've talked about. But verse 1 tells us that David's time, his end is come. Now, I think it's interesting, and I would advise you to take some time and read through not only 1 Kings, but Chronicles as well. Chronicles is a great pair with 1 Kings. There's some information that you get in Chronicles that you don't in 1 Kings, and I'll share some of those things with you as I go. I won't be able to share everything, but I would read those. It's 1 Kings about verse chapter 20 and on. We'll match up to kind of what we're talking about here. So I do advise you to go back. So they don't line up like 1 Chronicles chapter 1 and 1 Kings chapter 1 are talking about different things. So you kind of have to figure out where they line up. But I believe it's about chapter 19 or 20 where you begin to read about Solomon and the end of David's king, David being king and Solomon beginning his reign. But I will allude to those things from time to time. So chapter 2, so it says his time to die has come near. He knows that, he realizes it. We noted in our last study how David at this point appears, from my understanding of the text, is he's almost bedridden at this time, or what would you call it? Maybe not bedridden is not the right term, but he's at that point in his life where he's not getting up and moving around a lot anymore. And so he then brings Solomon to himself. In verse 2, he reminds him of the covenant that he, David, had with God. And he says, it's the same covenant God will have with you, which is what?
He remembers to be a king on the throne.
Okay, you keep my commandments. There will be a king, son of David on the throne. You may want to add to that. What was a part of this covenant? What's that? I'm sorry. Yeah, and that's going to be, of course, tested over time. But as long as they're faithful to God, God will bless them. So if we were to break it down into a very bare kind of summary, it's if you're faithful, I'll bless you. If you're unfaithful, I'll remove my blessing. And so David shares it with Solomon. He says, God makes the same covenant with you. Be strong and show yourself a man, keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses. I think it's an important phrase there, as it's written, because there are going to be some kings later on who are going to be like, well, what if I rewrite the law? And they're going to try to rewrite some things that they shouldn't be. And so he says that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. And so that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me. If your son pays close attention to their way to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack for a man on the throne of Israel. And so long as that's true, God will keep his blessing to him. Now, that's going to be tested and pretty soon. All right. So, let's go on verse 5. So, David says, I want you, this ought to be the motto of your kingship. Verses 1 through 4. And so, verse 5, he says, moreover... I think I jumped ahead there. Let me do that. Moreover, you also know what Joab the son... Okay, so 1 through 4, David's advice. 5 and on are some requests that David's going to make of Solomon. Now notice, number 1, he's going to talk about Joab. Now, before we get into that, who's Joab? Just a brief summary. Who is he? Okay, captain of the army, what'd you say?
General of the army.
Yeah, so he's the commander of the army. He's been with David, with David for a long time, hadn't he? He was with David for a while now, since before he was king. And so he's a very powerful man. All right, so... David says, moreover, you also know what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me. How he dealt with the two. Now notice what he says, what he did to me. Now what you're going to notice is, Joab didn't physically do anything to David, but notice what he says. How he dealt with the two commanders of the armies of Israel, Abner, the son of Ner, and Amasa, the son of Jether. Now, real quickly, who's Abner? Who was Abner? Who's caretaker? Yeah, Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. So that wasn't Abner. That was it was starts with a Z. It wasn't Zeruiah. It was the guy that found Mephibosheth and brought him to David. I'll have to look that up for you. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. But Abner was the commander of Saul's army. Remember, Abner was Saul's man. Now, remember what happened with Abner? When David began to win against Saul, what happened with Abner? Remember, Saul basically Abner had been very faithful to Saul, and Saul's losing, and he begins to blame Abner. And he says some things to Abner that are, you know, that made Abner mad. And so what does Abner do? He goes over to David. He says, I'll come over here to you. You remember what David said to him? He made a peace compact with him. That if he's faithful, David will accept him. Okay, just keep that in mind. We'll come back to that in just a second. So that's Abner. What about Amasa? Who's Amasa? He was the commander of whose army? Absalom. Remember when Absalom's rebellion happened? Who did Absalom put in charge of his armies? Amasa. Very similar situation. David makes a peace compact with Amasa. He even goes as far as saying, Amasa, I'm going to replace Joab and I'm going to put you as commander over my armies. Now, this is after David's, Absalom's been killed. You don't know what's going to happen with Amasa. And David says, you're going to be commander. Or maybe, I don't remember if Absalom was dead yet, but it is all during that period of time. So, David makes two peace compacts. Well, what happened in both situations? Now, notice as you continue reading, he says, Amasa the son of Jether, verse 5, whom he killed, avenging in time of peace for blood that had been shed in war, putting the blood of war on the belt around his waist and on the sandals on his feet. Now, we were kind of talking about this last week, but Joab was a man of war, but he was also a vengeful man. Now, you remember Abner killed his brother. Remember, they had come out, and you had Abner with the men of Saul. You had Joab with the men of David. They were out there, and they started fighting one another, and they were chasing each other around. And Abner told, what is his name? Somebody get his name. But he told the young man, he said, stop chasing me. He didn't. Well, they battled. Abner killed him. And Joab didn't initially do anything to Abner. But later on, after David had made a peace compact, he took his vengeance out on Abner and killed him. Well, what about Amasa? What happened with Amasa? David makes a peace compact, and what does he do? He finds Amasa out on the road, and he kills him. Remember, he leaves him out on the road to bleed out there. Eventually, they pull him off into the woods or whatever, out of the way, and he killed him, right? Now, David doesn't even mention it, but he also killed Absalom. Now, the difference there is they're in the middle of war, and David probably shouldn't have asked for that to start with, but he did, and Joab didn't listen. But he doesn't even bring that up. He does bring up those two. And David says he killed them in the time of peace, not in the time of war. And you want to go back and look at that. I don't know if I have these up here on the board, but I don't. But you want to read more about Abner, you can go back to 2 Samuel chapter 3, 27, and then later on, 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 10, you can read about his killing of Amasa. That's where those two references come from. And again, David doesn't mention it, but just to recall to mind, he also killed Absalom, and you can read about that in 2 Samuel 18, 5 and following. And so, he's got a lot of blood on his hands. And not just blood from war, but even just out of vengeance. Quite honestly, he murdered those two men. And later on in this chapter, I don't have this, I'm trying to decide whether to... He'll get more into this, and we'll come back to this later in verse 32, but hold on to that. Let's go into verse 6. So David reminds him about what happened, and then notice verse 6. He says, act therefore according to your wisdom. All right. So he leaves it up to Solomon. He doesn't tell Solomon, you need to do this, but I have a request. But do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol, to Sheol in peace. What's David saying? You need to bring justice against him. He's a murderer. David accused him of two murders, which he committed. And what's the judgment for murder? Well, a life for a life. That's even the law. I mean, that's the law of Moses, isn't it? Blood for blood. And so David says, do not let his let him go down in death in peace, but bring justice. That's basically what he's saying. Sheol, interesting term. That's the same term later on where we get the term Hades from. Sheol is not hell. He's talking about the grave. So he's basically talking about death, right? And so he says, don't do that. So that's the first request. Number two, any questions about that before I move on? I know it's a lot. Okay, so he's going to make his second request. He says in verse 7, but deal loyally with the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite. So who is Barzillai? Y'all remember his what happened with him?
Leading up to David when he was fleeing
Absalom. Exactly. He helped nourish David and his people. He gave them protection and food. He did a lot of good for him. You remember when David returns to Jerusalem, David asked Barzillai to come with him, and he says, no, I don't want to do that. I'm an old man. Let me go home, be with my people, but you can take my son with you. And David does that. However, David here has a different request. He says, verse 7, let them be among those who eat at your table. Now, there's significance to that. What is it? He doesn't just say, let him live in Jerusalem. Don't just let him live in peace. But he says, let him eat at your table. What's he indicating by that? You let anybody eat at your table? Are you a little bit guarded about who you let in your house? Doesn't it say something about the people you invite into your home? Yeah, and it really meant something to David. You remember this is the same with Jonathan's son, Mishbosheth, right? Mishbosheth, one of the things David did to try to repay his debt of faithfulness that he had toward Jonathan, he brings Mishbosheth, he lets him eat at his own table, to eat with the king. Really meant something. And so he says, you need to, please treat them well. I won't say you need to, but he says, please treat them well. Let them be among those who eat at your table, for with such loyalty they met me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. You can go back to 2 Samuel 17 to read about that later in that chapter, verse 27 and following. So there's Barzillai. So he has a negative request and a positive request. And then verse 8, he has a couple more negative ones, a couple more justice dealings that he wants to be done. All right, verse 8, there's also with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite, from Barum, who cursed me with a grievous curse on the day I went to Mahanaim. Mahanaim. Who's this guy? Who's Shimei? Do you remember him? Remember reading about that?
He was the guy that cursed David because he was the follower of Saul.
2 Samuel chapter 16. He's the guy that was throwing rocks and cursing David. Kept cursing him as he was leaving. Remember, one of his soldiers said, let's just cut his head off. Let's kill him right now. David says, don't. Let him be. This is God working through him. Interesting kind of phraseology by David. He says, let him alone. If I'm paraphrasing, but basically he says, if I'm to be cursed by God, I'll be cursed. But if not, let this stand as proof. So He's cursing David as he leaves, but then later on, when David comes home in 2 Samuel 19, what's Shimei doing?
Asking for mercy.
He comes out asking for mercy, right? Don't hold this against me, please. And what's David's response? If you just summarize it.
He says, I won't.
Right, and so David shows him mercy. Again, one of his soldiers says, let's kill him now. Now we definitely can kill him, right? David says, no, don't do that. Let him be. Let him live at peace. David will remind Solomon of that as well. He says, later in verse 8, he says, but when he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with a sword. All right, so David says, I'm not going to do that. And so he's allowed to live there. However, verse 9, David says, I, very important pronoun, I will not put you to death by the sword. But notice what he says. Verse 9, now therefore, do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man. This is even before he asked for wisdom, by the way. You will know what you ought to do to him. So David basically, just like he said with Joab, he says, you do as you see fit. But let me just give you what I think ought to happen. And so he goes on to say, and you shall bring his gray head down with blood to Sheol. So he says, I know you're wise. You're going to know what to do, and you're not going to let him go to death in peace. And so again, David sees the justice finally given to him is that he is pronounced punishable by death. And he's true to his word. David's not going to be the one to pass judgment. He will let Solomon do that.
Most likely, all those scriptures would say, when they went to kill him, they would rehearse to him why it was that he was dying.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Here you are, you have done this wickedness in your life, and now you're being paid restitution.
Yeah. Absolutely. So David has those few very simple requests, and so he gives Solomon some wisdom there. I said two, I meant one. There are two total requests that he asked for justice, which is with Shimei and Joab. And then he asked for blessings on Barsilla. So now, as we've noted, and it's been kind of the author here has been kind of cluing us in to David now. It's getting near the end. We're not sure how long it's been this process, but we do know a little bit how long he served. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 2 and verse 10. The text tells us, then David slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. Where's that at?
Bethlehem.
Interestingly enough, it's also the place of what? The death of David, but the birthplace of Jesus. He slept with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. And the time that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned 7 years in Hebron and 33, another just interesting kind of fact, 33 years in Jerusalem. Now, we don't know for sure how long Jesus lived. We've estimated that it was about 33 years. Just interesting parallels. You can't make any more out of it, but it is interesting. Interesting coincidences. Now, the death of David in Bethlehem and the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem is not just a coincidence. There is foresight in God in that, because later on, it will be prophesied about the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. That all is planned out by God. Very important. I think it's also interesting that this is one of those ideas of David being buried in Bethlehem being buried in the grave that Peter will use as illustrations in his message in Acts chapter 2. He will compare David to Jesus, and David's dead. You know where his tomb is. Jesus is not in his tomb. Jesus is better than David. So just interesting. Chronicles gives us a little bit more kind of the same information, but it gives us kind of a summary here of the life of David. 1 Chronicles 29, beginning at verse 26. Thus David, the son of Jesse, reigned over all Israel. That's also pretty significant. David and then Solomon will be the last kings to reign over a united Israel. Now, we've already noted that you've already began to see division growing in the country, and that will only get worse as you move forward. A division is coming. Well, David reigned over a united Israel. Verse 27. The time that he reigned over Israel was 40 years. He reigned 7 years in Hebron, 33 years in Jerusalem. Then he died at a good age, full of days, riches, and honor. And his son, and Solomon, his son, reigned in his place. Very different biography or obituary than Saul, right? And one of the things we've done in this class was just tried to compare those two kings and how different they were. And even here at the end, you see a very different end to both men. King Saul, how'd he die? Killed by possible suicide. At least requested suicide. He had some help in that, probably. And died as a defeated king on the battlefield. David died at peace. What? Yes. And maybe he cut his limbs off as well. I can't remember. I need to go back and reread that. Not at all. Roger?
I'm thinking maybe the city of David in this case is referring to a hill in Jerusalem, not Bethlehem.
What makes you say that?
Well, there's definitely a part of Jerusalem that's considered the city of David. And then, I remember, that they had the grave of David. Was in Jerusalem when I was there.
I'll go back and look that up. I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I assumed it was in Bethlehem, but it's something I need to look at. Because Bethlehem's called the city of David. But I have to go back and look at my geography, and maybe I'm messing something up. But I'll check into that. Good question, though. Anybody else have information on that? Maybe help the rest of us out. I've always associated those two in my mind. I've never associated any other place in Jerusalem with the city of David. But Bethlehem's not far from Jerusalem. So I'll put some thought into that and look that up. Good question. Any others? So if we go back to 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 12 says, Solomon sat on the throne of David his father, and the king and his kingdom was firmly established. In all, you really have a pretty smooth transition from one king to that, especially when you compare it to the last one, right? From Saul to David, that was a very messy process. This was a very smooth process. Now, this will be the last real smooth one. Depending on how you look at it. When we get to Rehoboam, things will be a little different. But now you have Solomon beginning his reign over Israel. And so, I want to go to 2 Chronicles chapter 1. So as you get into 2 Chronicles and you begin to read about the reign of Solomon, verse 1 says that Solomon, the son of David, established himself in the king in his kingdom, and the Lord his God, very important, was with him and made him exceedingly great. Man, Solomon, in the beginning of his reign, was a powerful king for Israel. During his reign, he brought peace. You remember David, the reason God said you cannot build my temple was why? Do you remember why? You're a man of war. There's blood on your hands. But your son Solomon, he's going to be able to build it. Because he's not going to be a king of war. He's going to be a king of peace. And so he begins his reign very well. Again, the text there, you can't underestimate. And the Lord his God was with him. And so a powerful statement. You go on later as you continue reading. Solomon spoke to all Israel, to the commanders of thousands and of hundreds, to the judges, to all the leaders in all Israel, the heads of his father's house. And Solomon and all the assembly with him went to the high places at Gibeon, for the tent of meeting of God, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, had made in the wilderness, was there. Now notice that. Where at this point is the Ark of the Covenant? It's in Jerusalem. Where is the tabernacle? In Gibeon. That's not good, is it? Now, he will bring those two together in the temple, but you start asking, why does Israel have some problems at times? Well, it's because they mess these things up. So they've come together at Gibeon, there at the tent of meeting. Verse 4 clues us into where the ark is. David had brought the ark of God to Kiriath-Jearim, to the place that David had prepared for it, for he had pitched a tent for it in Jerusalem. So it's in a tent. I think it's interesting. It's not the proper tent for it. It's not the tabernacle. But here you have the tabernacle. Just interesting to me. Moreover, the bronze altar of Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, was there before the tabernacle of the Lord. And Solomon and the assembly sought it out. And Solomon went up there to the bronze altar before the Lord, which is at the tent of meeting, and offered 1,000 burnt offerings on it. Now, I think the indication that he offered it does not necessarily indicate that he personally offered it, but that he ordered it to be offered. Who was to offer the sacrifice? The high priest. Not the king. That's what got Solomon in trouble. So I think when you read that, it may kind of confuse us and think, oh, was Solomon offering sacrifice? No. I think the proper indication there is that it was ordered to be done. So I think it's also interesting to think about, as soon as he becomes king, we don't know how long it is, but it's not too long after being established as king, that what does he do? He offers sacrifice. I can't help but think about Noah. What was the very first thing Noah did when he got off the ark? He built an altar to offer sacrifice to God. Right? And so you have examples of men throughout Scripture, when God would do something, one of the first things they would do was to praise God. And I think it was important that Solomon keep that proper mental focus. All right. I don't want to get into this particular portion because I have 1 minute. But next week, so David made some requests. What does Solomon do with it? We're going to find out. Solomon's going to bring some justice to some people, and it's not going to go well for them. We'll talk about that next week. Any questions or comments? Thank y'all. We'll be dismissed and rejoin for devotional in just a few minutes.